good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. This beautiful Monday edition of the podcast is brought to you by our good friends over at Pepsi, who are reminding us that this football season is going to be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you are watching this season or how you watch this past weekend, Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. So if you missed out on it on week two, there's time to become part of the League of Football Watchers for week three, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch, like myself, like Benjamin Solak, like all of you out there. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast to start out your week. Ben, we had another jam-packed Sunday. Buddy, we don't even have bye weeks yet for teams. We are full pedal to the metal for NFL games, and it was an exciting slate. How was your weekend, my friend?
I wish we had bye weeks for teams. Man, everybody got hurt. This was horrible.
That is true. Man, I was starting the podcast with some hype, but, like, you're right.
It was, I know, but it was just sad, man. Like, I think that an underreported, underrealized thing of the lack of training camp and the lack of preseason was just guys were not going to be in ideal hitting shape. Guys were not going to be in ideal football shape, whatever it was, conditioning. You've had more people go down with cramps, it feels like, than people recently. It's just the amount of injuries that have put guys on IR, and obviously I was shorter this year, but then obviously we saw week two injuries that are going to limit guys.
Yeah.
Just sucks. So I hope that this was just a really unfortunate numbers aberration, a spike, and this is not something we see for the rest of the year, but feels like through 2 weeks we've had a lot of injuries.
Well, that is, you know, it's, people complain about training camp and preseason for this exact reason, right? They're like, don't put dudes on the field before they're really making their money or really doing things that matter in regular season games, because we see every year people get hurt and they're out for the year in training camp or preseason. We're like, man, this sucks. Like, if there wasn't a preseason, maybe we wouldn't see this. And this year we're seeing, hey, there's no preseason, and a lot of guys are getting hurt. I said this on Twitter because somebody asked me this question. He's like, hey, do you think there are more injuries right now because of the lack of offseason work or the ability to take those hits and get the body ready? And I think there's certainly an argument to that. You know, I think that there is validity towards that angle, but at the same time, it's just a violent game. You know, it's grown ass men right, moving full speed, hitting each other every single snap, and it's just, this is the part of the game that sucks the most. It's an unfortunate because the injury list. I was going to get to this at the very end of the podcast if we didn't bring it up here, but we did. The injury list is way too long this week, and to some really, really good players, and so it's an unfortunate part of what happens in the game. But there were a lot of results around the league outside of the injuries that, shoot, might have been season defining, that we are going to get to in this podcast. We're breaking it up into segments. We are introducing some segments that we're getting to this week. We think it'll be a very fun way for you guys to keep up with the podcast, maybe keep Ben and I in check a little bit, give some guys some recognition, and really focus in what we think the storylines are each week. Sometimes, unfortunately, I'm just letting you guys know out there, it means that we're not always going to get to spend a lot of time on what might be your favorite team's game of the week. And we apologize for that, but we're hoping that this is going to be a really fun way to go throughout the podcast throughout the season. It's going to be ever-evolving, so we're going to switch it up a little bit. But the segment I wanted to start out with today, Ben, since this is a draft podcast,
never heard of it,
is something simple: Rookie of the Week. And what Ben and I are going to do is we are going to record every Rookie of the Week that Ben and I choose. And at the end of the year, we're going to tally up who may have had the most Rookie of the Week votes. So if I vote for a guy 1 week and Ben votes for the same guy just in a different week, that's two votes for him. And so we're going to see if we can crown a Rookie of the Week at the end of the season. But Ben, you were focused in on one game in particular that we didn't think that we were going to get a big rookie performance.
Yeah, out of nowhere, Randy Orton, dude.
But we did. RKO out of nowhere, baby. Tell us about how Justin Herbert did in his first NFL start for the Los Angeles Chargers?
Okay, firstly, the context behind this start is bananas. It like Tyrod Taylor was fine during the week, pregame warmups, injured his chest. Herbert said he figured out, he learned he was the starter 5-10 seconds before kickoff, which I'm assuming is an exaggeration.
Was Tyrod just like repping just dumbbells in the locker room?
Georgia Tech Jeff Collins, baby. He was lifting weights on the sideline 45 minutes before kickoff.
He needed the chest pump, you know? He just needed the pump.
I was writing, so I didn't have audio on, like, in the beginning when they explained it, and I searched for it. I couldn't really find it. But Taylor's just got a chest injury. Don't really know the details behind it. Justin Herbert gets the start against the Super Bowl defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. Casual. Which the Chiefs don't have the best defense. We're not going to lie to you. Not going to lie to you and say the Chiefs won it on the back of their defense. There's no two ways about that. I mean, the starting corners for this team were L'Jarius Sneed and Rashad Fenn. Right, like it's not like he was out there playing the best secondary in the face of the planet. But the thing with Herbert coming out was that he wasn't ready to step in year one. He was a guy that you were going to want to come on slowly. He was a tools guy more than he was a production guy. And he comes in with no prep with the ones. Firstly, Shane Steichen's calling a great game for him. Pistol, design runs, QB keep stuff, a lot of quick stuff underneath, some screen stuff, easy stuff, the pitch and catch, things that he needs. But Herbert's also under pressure, firing bullets to Keenan Allen in tight windows. His touchdown pass was a well-placed fade ball away from coverage. I mean, this was more accurate than I remember Herbert being in Oregon. He's doing it in the league. We didn't know he was going to start. I guess maybe it's kind of that, like, you know, just like, you know, like it's when they say, all right, like, you know, we're going to give you the shot. We're going to count down from 5. And then they go 5, 4. And then they just like give you the shot. Cause you don't, you know, you don't, if you anticipate it, you like, 10
I was so pissed when that would happen to me as a kid.
Yeah. I'd fight somebody.
I guess it was just it was, you know, it was Herbert felt like he could play loose because he had no time to freak out. But
I have a question.
Hey, me.
You brought up the fact that it was like, oh, no big deal. It's just your first time out there in the NFL and you're going up against the $500 million man, the Super Bowl champions. I feel like that might make it actually easier for Herbert because it's like, OK, we're not supposed to win this game. You know, like it's the Chiefs. We're not supposed to out-duel him. I'm just going to go out there and sling it. Do you think there's anything to that?
Yes and no. Because the problem is I can't sit here and say to you, oh, you know, Herbert's a gamer. He's not a gamer. He certainly was, like that win against Utah, Pac-12 championship, and then the win against Wisconsin, the bowl game. Like, his last two games were, like, good wins, you know what I mean? And, like, critical situations. But across the course of his career in Oregon, like, he did not rise to big game situations, really. He did not rise to big drive situations. That wasn't him. And so, I don't know, if you told me, you know, rookie quarterback faces ex-Super Bowl champions and just has a great game, I'd be like, yeah, of course. He's Joe Burrow. That's what he does. He's just like Broadway Joe. He loves the spotlight.
Right.
Herbert's whole thing was like, oh, he likes biology and doesn't talk. You know what I mean? Like, he never really seemed emotionally charged. But this was just...
Oh, I get it. Charged.
Again, right, I, as a guy, like, I followed Herbert really closely. I covered the Pac-12 for the Draft Network in the 2018 season. And obviously, 2019 season, we knew he was coming out because he was a senior. I can't remember Herbert playing this well for a game against, like, a respectable defense.
I was following him from afar. You were watching this game. I was watching the Houston-Baltimore game for the most part, just for the assignments that we had this weekend. And I just couldn't believe that the score kind of like remained what it did. And like, I had Red Zone on in the background on a different TV. And every time they'd flip over, it's like, okay, the Chargers are hanging with them. Okay, the Chargers are driving. Okay, the Chargers are in the Red Zone. I was like, Justin Herbert's doing this? Like, it just felt like there was no fear in him. When I was watching all these highlights, I mean, dude, the play where he took the hit from Wilson at the sideline and Wilson's down on the ground and Justin Herbert gets back up as if you just hit a 6'5" block of cement.
Yeah, dude. No, the throw to Keenan Allen where he had Frank Clark. I think it was Tano Passanio. Might have been Terrence Wharton that that young DT they've got who's playing well. I can't remember who it was.
Family friend of mine, Tano Passanio, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Tano Passanio, friend of the podcast, friend of Trevor. Let me see. It was 94, so none of those guys I listed.
Just go with Clark so the story sounds better.
That ball he put on Keenan was something. Man, that's not that. I wrote this one because I wrote about Herbert. Joe Burrow's played two good games. He has not made a throw like that. And obviously, you'd rather have good games and good throws.
Damn.
But Herbert, arm talent's always been the thing with him. And you don't teach that throw, right?
There's
that was impressive.
The word, folks, we hit it. Arm talent. What are we? How many minutes are we in with the podcast?
10:24,
and we got the arm talent.
Arm talent's 100% a buzzword, and people say like, you know, it's not defined, and that's always the case with buzzwords. They get expanded to cover this wide range. They lose their specificity. Herbert made that throw. Fading away from pressure on a hair trigger. It was just, I'm going to get hit. I think I have this. Let me send it. He didn't think about that thing. He just told his body, put the ball out there. And his body said, okay, I know how to do that. Right? That's what arm talent is. It is a natural ability to throw receivers open. Bang, baby. Beautiful pass. So the thing with the Chargers now is you're 1-1. You nearly got beat by the Bengals. Worst team in the league in week 1. Right? Mm-hmm. Number 1 overall pick.
Yeah.
You come out with the rookie, and you go toe-to-toe against the Kansas City Chiefs. Anthony Lynn said in the postgame presser, if Tyrod Taylor's 100%, he's our starting quarterback.
No.
Yeah, well, guess what?
No.
Tyrod Taylor should not be 100% for the rest of the year then.
No.
Unless Herbert really starts struggling.
Right.
Which is possible, because Herbert's always ran hot and cold. But the player that you just saw is what you want to get out of this quarterback. It's what you want to get out of this pick. At least the foundation of it.
Game one, but, no doubt about it.
Yeah, this is it. So you cannot reward Herbert's performance with him being put back on the bench. You need to say, hey, whatever it was that had you doing that, we're going to keep sussing that out and feeling that out. And listen, if Herbert comes out and has two shaky games, has some bad games, and then you want to say, you know what, Tyrod's 100% now, and we're going to go back to him like we said, go for it. You have that luxury, but you owe it to yourself to see if your quarterback's just ready for the league like this. Because if he is, it accelerates your reload.
It accelerates
your restructuring so much.
Yeah, it'd be hard to go back to Tyrod Taylor, and I love Tyrod Taylor. Like, I'm a big Tyrod guy, but you drafted Justin Herbert number 6 overall for this reason, and you had him sitting behind Taylor because you liked the guy that you had in front of Herbert, and you didn't want to throw him against the Wolves. Now, as you said, Kansas City Chiefs. Not the best defense in the NFL, but the quarterback on the other sideline is. And Herbert, I mean, like, they had a lead on Kansas City for most of the game. Kansas City had a comeback, kick a field goal as time expired to take it to overtime. You know, that's where we were in this game. And so he went toe-to-toe with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL this past week. I think you absolutely have to note that. And you just have to be careful and smart about it going forward. But the part of Anthony Lynn's sentence that I think is a lie is the part where he says 100%. Like, if they wanted,
right, that's
if
the
they
room.
Wanted to go back right. to Tyrod, I don't think I'd have that big of a problem with it. I could see it one way or the other. I think that for me to really make that decision, you're going to have a lot of people over the country talking about this, talking about who do they start, blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be a lot of people who, guess what, aren't in that situation. And we're not in the situation to know all of the facts of what's going on within the locker room, within the team. I think Anthony Lynn is. But I think the part of his sentence that's a lie is him saying 100%. It shouldn't be 100%. Because if you say 100%, you're completely discrediting what your rookie number 6 overall quarterback did.
He said, if Tyrod's 100% in terms of health.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so.
Which, to me, he's saying that as, so that when he goes back and watches film
on Tuesday. I hear you.
He says, oh, man, Herbert looked really good. He can go to
the
podium on Wednesday and go, yeah, Tyrod's still not feeling great. We're going to start Herbert another week.
All right, there we go then. Anthony Lynn, who we like on this podcast, they said the exact things that he said.
Yeah.
So, Herbert, really great first day. I got two guys that I wanted to nominate, and I wanted to shout two guys out. I'm only going to give one the award, obviously. I'm not going to cheat on the first week of the podcast, although that would be pretty on brand for us. The first one, Colts running back, Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor, let me check the stats here, had a metric crap ton of rushing yards during his career at Wisconsin. He comes in. We all thought, okay, maybe that there's a chance that Jonathan Taylor could be the starter right out of the gate. He could be a feature back. He was better with his hands the year before. He was better at kind of those non-running aspects of playing running back going into his time with the Colts, going into the NFL draft. And so I know a lot of fantasy football people were like, okay, this dude's the feature. He's the future, all that kinds of stuff. Comes out week one, Marlon Mack out snapping him. Naheem Hines out snapping him. Jonathan Taylor almost looks like the forgotten guy. Marlon Mack, unfortunately, gets hurt. We thought that it was really just going to be Naheem Hines really getting the majority of the work, and here it comes Jonathan Taylor, 26 attempts, first 100-yard rushing game. So he gets 100 yards in week two of his NFL career with a touchdown. He was a big reason why the Colts were able to control the game as much as they did. They win 28-11 in a game that they really had to have after dropping last week to Jacksonville. And so I thought that this was really cool, a good moment for Taylor because, look, even though the difference between 99 yards rushing and 100 yards rushing is simply 1 yard, but it's not a milestone that we get to talk about. It's not a talking point that we get to remember.
A century is a century, man.
Right? And so I think it's a really big deal when a running back gets their first 100-yard game in their career. I hope it's the first of many for Jonathan Taylor because I thought that he was a phenomenal runner when he was at Wisconsin. And the other guy that I wanted to shout out was Buck safety Antoine Winfield Jr. I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch a lot of the All-22 of Antoine Winfield Jr. Bucks beat the Carolina Panthers 31-17, I believe, is the final score. If I remember
correctly. Because of the Leonard Fournette ice, which, by the way, Ronald Jones era, rip, week one, 2020, week two, 2020. We loved it.
Man. We had to
I'll believe in Rojo forever. I'll believe in him until I die.
We had to listen to that forever. And then Fournette comes out here and just leads the team and rushes. Now, Arian said at the end of the game, he was like, oh, it was good to get to... I don't mean to say that sound insulting of Arians in that disregard, but he said, oh, it was good to get Fournette's fresh legs in there at the end of the game, basically keeping the door open for them to continue to start Ronald Jones. But look, the final carry count was Leonard Fournette 12 carries, Ronald Jones 7. Leonard Fournette rushed for 103 yards on his 12 carries. Ronald Jones rushed for 23 on his 7. So
listen, you've got to establish the Rojo to set up the LIFO.
Somebody give me that. Actually, all right, so leave that back part up. Establish the Rojo, I could see. But okay, anyway, going back to the defensive side, Antoine Winfield Jr. I thought was all over the place, and he was playing fast and very aggressive in what he was doing. He is going to be a major part of that defense, I think, moving forward. So I wanted to shout him out. He made a really big play on the forced fumble of Teddy Bridgewater that the Buccaneers were able to recover, and they scored on the immediate next play on a touchdown to Mike Evans. But there was a very crucial play. I believe it was on a fourth down call where Teddy Bridgewater did a little pitch out to Christian McCaffrey, and it looked like Antoine Winfield Jr. was just eyes wide, so ready to go get the sack on Bridgewater that he completely forgot about contain on Christian McCaffrey, and Christian McCaffrey was not only able to convert that, but also score a touchdown on it. So there were some errors still. There were some rookie errors, and that's why I am giving my Rookie of the Week honor to Jonathan Taylor, hitting that century mark. But I wanted to shout out Antoine Winfield Jr. because he really showed out on the broadcast, and he might be a guy that we talk about for Watchers Wednesday when we go through the All-22 film.
I saw good Antoine Winfield tweets. I saw good Jordan Whitehead tweets, which Jordan Whitehead high, baby.
Oh, and dude,
I saw good Carlton Davis tweets. And man, that's that Bucs secondary. Like, I was not big on Jamel Dean, but everybody else is just a dude. And it's so nice to see how well they're playing. I think that when the Brady integration with the Arians offense, Mike Evans play style, Chris Godwin health thing, narrative, O.J. Howard, Rob Gronkowski, when that all dies and that all, like, you know, falls out of the public interest, we're going to sit down and realize just how good the Bucs defense has been.
Oh, yeah. No, and they're getting off to a great start. Them retaining Todd Bowles, for all of the additions that the Buccaneers made this past offseason, them retaining Todd Bowles for another year is the biggest move slash not move that was made for this team.
Was he like in jeopardy?
No, but he's, you know, he was a head coach before, and the Bucs and the Bucs defense in the second half of the season, which was a really young defense, and also didn't even have Jason Pierre-Paul to start the year. They were a top five defense in the NFL in the second half of 2019. And so there was a chance that somebody could have come calling for Todd Bowles. I felt like it would have been a it would have been a stretch. Like, I knew that other names were going to be on the forefront before Bowles, but still, keeping him where they did, I thought was huge for him, and getting him for another year. Now, the big one with Bowles is next year, because I think you are right, and I think a lot of people are going to look at this Bucs defense, and they're going to realize how good it is, and they're going to look at Todd Bowles as the orchestrator of it, and they're going to combine it with the second half of 2019, and I think Bowles is going to get some talks to be a head coach after this season.
Oh, yeah?
But you and I have talked about this on the pod before. I think the Bucs' real year to compete for a title is next year. If they get to keep Bowles for 2021, it's huge. Massive for 2021. So, we'll see. We'll see. Wanted to shout that out. Before we get to what is, folks, the biggest headline from over the weekend, at least I think, we got to talk to people about Visa. Visa knows that local businesses are the heartbeat of our communities. Whether there are cornerstone stores, our coffee shops, our favorite local shops, local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders. They call us by name. They're always giving back, making a difference, going that extra mile to support us and the communities that we live in. Right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So now it is our turn to support them and return the favor. The next time you go shopping, make sure that you are shopping at a local business around you and look for the contactless symbol to tap and pay with contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop absolutely matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. Ben, what I believe to be the biggest storyline, at least, you know, from our podcast point of view, looking at things league-wide,
only
looking
point of view that matters,
also from a potential draft perspective, is the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons,
brother.
You and I did not think the Falcons were going to be very good this year. What did you? I had them at 6-10, 5-11,
5-11,
something like that. And we had them both around the same range, but it was really a big step back from what we've seen from the Atlanta Falcons before. This is something. What happened this Sunday?
This takes talent.
Is just debilitating. The Falcons were up 20-0 at one point in the first quarter. They'd forced three fumbles on the Cowboys in the first quarter, and they were up 20-0. They lose this game 40-39. At the last second, the Falcons had a 99% win percentage with 7 minutes left to go in this game.
Trevor, they had 99.9% win probability per ESPN with 2.5 minutes left in this game.
With 2.5 minutes to go in the game. And they lost. This is basically saying there was only one reality. I'm literally doing the finger motion that Doctor Strange does when he looks at Tony Stark and he says that there was literally only one way.
Right.
This is it right here. There was only one way the Falcons could have possibly lost this game to the Dallas Cowboys. And it happened. And my goodness, is it a gutting feeling for Falcons fans, for the Falcons players, and I think most importantly for what we're about to talk about, for the current regime of people who are in charge in Atlanta right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, for me, this superlative, this segment is dumbest thing I saw this week. And for Trev and I both, it's the Atlanta Falcons. Specifically for me, it's the Atlanta Falcons on the onside kick up by two. Atlanta had somehow, by tremendous machinations of their own ability, used all of their timeouts across the course of the fourth quarter. They used their final timeout during the Cowboys' touchdown drive to pull within two. They had already used one of their timeouts at the end of the third quarter, just getting like their offense set and everything while they were still up by 12, while they were still up by 19. Just wasteful, right? Didn't think they were going to need them. So they have no timeouts. No ability to stop the clock. No ability to get set against the onside kick look, right? So once Greg Zuerlein puts the ball down sideways, special teams coordinator can't go, I need a timeout. I have no idea what this guy's doing. You got the whole unit out there for the onside kick. And as per usual, there are guys who are responsible for the blocking, and then there are guys behind those guys who are responsible for grabbing the ball. And so everybody's in their roles. But all of this to say that when Zuerlein hits that ball and it just starts dribbling 5 yards up the field, just spinning like a top, not a single one of the blockers, all of whom are staring at the ball. They're not engaging.
Go get the ball!
Remembers that they're allowed to get it. It's amazing. It's amazing to have that consensus, that just wide sweeping,
I could not believe it.
Vacation of mental faculties by multiple players. I mean, Hayden Hurst is just staring at it at 6 yards, at 7 yards, just staring at it. Nobody's screaming at him from the, obviously they're on the Cowboys sideline, but nobody's screaming at him. Fall on it. They aren't allowed to touch it. You are. And it's not like it's bobbling. It's not like it's like weeble wobbling. It is spinning on a very predictable path. And even if it weren't, Dallas is going to be in a position to land on this if it gets to 10. Fall on the ball. And this is what it comes down to for Atlanta. It's you are a head coach in Dan Quinn who nearly lost your job last year. And after you were up 39-24, 15-point lead with 8 minutes left in the fourth, you get to a 2-point deficit. You give up that lead. All you have to do is recover the onside kick and you squeak by, and nobody sits down with your players, you or your special teams coach, and says, hey, remember, you can fall on the ball if it doesn't go 10 yards. And that's the thing is when this many players make such a boneheaded decision, to me, that starts and stops with coaching. That starts and stops with the special team coach, and then obviously up the ladder through him to Dan Quinn. So it's stunning that, again, the Falcons have found a way to, as everybody on the timeline was saying, when the Falcons were up 26-7, the Falcons are going to find a way to get the Cowboys back in this game.
Right.
But nobody could have predicted
right.
that it would be as boneheaded as that onside kick.
No,
it goes to show you it's not a well-coached team.
Right. No, it was completely historic. And I think that over the last 2 years, the Falcons have been disappointing up until each bye week. And then they've really turned their season around after the bye week. This year, the bye week is not until week 10. And it's funny looking at the schedule here because, you know, let's just assume they don't make any changes because we're about to talk about Dan Quinn in a second. But they've got Chicago next week. Green mm-hmm. Bay, we assume that Green Bay is going to be a loss, but like Chicago's a 2-0 team, and they're not really a strong 2-0 team.
They're a 2-0 team. Atlanta's an 0-2 team, and Atlanta is favored in that game.
Right, and so like they play Green Bay in week 4. Okay, they're probably going to lose that one. That one's expected. But then they play Carolina, a Minnesota team that looks terrible, a Detroit Lions team that looks incompetent. Then they play Carolina again, and then they play Denver. And then it's the bye week. So like there is a reality that could exist where Dan Quinn kind of sticks around, but my biggest takeaway here is that Dan Quinn is not the man for this job. You have to accept that at this point. They have to. The Falcons, I think, really built their franchise around the city, around the community, around this, like, they have the in brotherhood thing where it's like, we are truly one. We're family. We stick up for each other. And I really do think that motto and mantra is a reason why they continue to believe in Dan Quinn, because Dan Quinn, from all accounts that I've heard, is a phenomenal dude. Like, the players love playing for him. He's been great with the fans. He's fantastic with ownership. Like, he's just a good dude. And I think that they keep him around for that reason. The Super Bowl was rough. Losing the way that they did was really, really tough. And I think a lot of people blamed it on Kyle Shanahan. And Kyle Shanahan has admitted that he probably should have did some things differently. They have now had 2 years where they were disappointing compared to their own expectations. And not even like the highest part of their expectations. Just like normal expectations that they should have had for the roster that they had. They're now 0-2. They now mm-hmm. put themselves as part of the statistic that says that less than 12% of everybody who goes 0-2 even makes the postseason. And not only that, this second loss that they have in the season, one, they get absolutely torched by Russell Wilson. Okay, I get it, it's Russell Wilson, but he only had four incomplete passes last week. Threw just as many touchdowns as incomplete passes. You had no answer for him at any point in the game. Dallas comes to town and you choke in unbelievable fashion. You couldn't handle a Dallas team that was out Tyron Smith, out their two starting right tackles, couldn't form any pass rush. Once Dallas started going up tempo in their offense, the defense had awful communication. They could not adjust to what Dallas was doing. They were running through the field at will. This is a Dan Quinn problem. Dan Quinn needs to be fired. And I really truly believe
right, I think Quinn's good, but that's the thing is, like, eventually at some point, it's like, we got to change something.
I think the biggest problem is, who is the head coach on the team if you fire Dan Quinn? Is it Dirk Cutter?
Given the way the offense is prepared, as played, it's going to be Dirk Cutter.
Right, and it's going to be Dirk Cutter. But Dirk Cutter, I think, is a better coordinator than he would be a head coach. I got to watch him firsthand and how he was as a head coach. Now he had Jameis Winston, so I guess you could always just throw it up as like, well, he had Jameis Winston as quarterback, so you could see. But I think that even with that being the case, even with me being reserved about Dirk Cutter stepping in as interim head coach, you have to fire Dan Quinn. You cannot sit here and even tell your fans that this, what they just watched on Sunday, is acceptable. I really do think, for as early as this is, they need to fire Dan Quinn now. That is what I think. Ben, going back to 1933, teams that scored at least 39 points and had zero turnovers were 440-0. Before Sunday. Dan Quinn's got to go.
Yeah, dude, if you go back and you look at games in which a team won with a turnover margin of at least -3, or at best -3, I should say, you usually see about one game a year, right? Like, this is an extremely irregular thing for the Cowboys to be -3 in the turnover differential and to win it. Quick trivia, you know which was one game last year where the team with a differential -3 won? Do you know what game it was?
I'm going to guess it's the Eagles game because you're bringing it up.
No, right logic path, wrong host.
Wrong host? Oh, was it Tampa?
Come on, baby. Well, Jameis. Turnover margin of -3 against the Colts, 138-35. He's the dude, man.
Isn't it funny how I've watched so many odd Jameis games that didn't even pop up in my memory?
Right. You're like, oh yeah, that Jameis 3 INT game. Well, the other Jameis 3 INT games. But yeah. Oh man, Atlanta.
Here's just a little fun game. If the NFL draft were today, folks, which is Monday morning, the Atlanta Falcons, yes, the Atlanta Falcons would have the #1 overall pick in the draft. I also want a big shout out Dak Prescott. He became the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for more than 400 yards and also rush for 3 touchdowns. So shout out to the Cowboys. They did it. They executed. They came back. They made history. Unbelievable, though, the collapse by the Falcons. Most surprising record is the next kind of segment that we have here. I touched on it a little bit. I talked about the Chicago Bears, one of the teams the Falcons are playing, or the team the Falcons are playing next week. Ben, Chicago is your most surprising record, 2-0. The Mitch Trubisky-led Chicago Bears, baby.
And here's the thing. The Bears beating the Lions and then beating the Giants isn't necessarily, like, stunning. I think that, you know, obviously I had the Bears as a low team. I know the Bears are going to lose games. I thought they're going to be below 800. They're obviously 2-0 right now. It's looking like
below
they're going to be
below
800. I had them below 800.
Yeah,
or
no,
below 500.
Yeah, no, that's bold. Below 800.
Below 500. Below 8-8. Equal things. And when you go and you watch that Lions game and then you watch the Giants game, you know, the Bears were up 17-0 against the Giants, and then they win 17-13. Trubisky had 2 picks in the second quarter, or in the second half, excuse me. Week one, they're down on the Lions. I believe it was 14-0, which, by the way, the worst thing I saw this week was nearly the fact that the Lions have blown 4 consecutive double-digit leads. I don't know how that's possible, but that is what they have done. Anyway, so they're down on the Lions. I believe it was 20-6. They were down the Lions. Yep, 14 points. Nope, 23-6. It was 17 points. And then they end up coming back and winning that 27-23. So they've had 2 streaks of offense that have brought them both of these wins. I don't necessarily think it's going to be super reliable, but I frankly thought that when the Bears decided to start Mitchell Trubisky, that the offense was going to come out flat, because they don't want to be playing with Trubisky. I thought that the team in general would come out flat because they wouldn't want Trubisky to be their starting quarterback. And honestly, you can even extrapolate a little bit of that onto Matt Nagy, who obviously helped make the decision for Trubisky to be the starting quarterback. By all reports out of camp, Trubisky did not necessarily win that job. So I saw no reason that there would be an exceeding amount of confidence in Trubisky. Mm-hmm. the Bears have not played like a team lacking in confidence. They haven't called plays, you know, coaching staff wise, a team that's lacking in confidence for Trubisky. They're asking him to throw it down the field. They're working what they've got. But also, I am surprised and pleased to see that the Bears roster, that the Bears starting defense, which I think is playing fairly well, their offensive line, which I think is exceeding expectations, is out there fighting. And that to me is a testament to Nagy and the head coaching job that he's doing, getting this team to believe despite the fact that they've had some really rough quarterback play with their young quarterback. Testament to Trubisky as well, to what extent he's leading in the locker room. Testament to the veterans that are in there as well. That's really nice to see. And so I'm very happy for a Bears 2-0 team. I don't think they're a great 2-0 team. I don't think that they're going to be a real contender in the NFC. I'm still unconvinced of that. And I think when you watch those games, that holds. Like I said, Atlanta's favored and Atlanta's 0-2. But there's a lot of spunk in this Bears team. And I get a lot of guff from Bears fans because I'm critical of the team.
Right.
And it's important. Sure. It's important for me to say, really respect the way that team's rallied. I'm really respect the way they've come out. That's been one of the most surprising things to me.
I will say that for the situations to have landed the way that they did in these first 2 weeks, it is nice for Chicago to get the two victories that they had and been 2-0. I mean, let's face it though. They should be at least 1-1. I mean, the Lions should have beat them multiple times last week. That was a Matt Patricia meltdown for the ages. You know, The Lions losing that game to the Bears last week would be one of the biggest choke jobs of the season had the Atlanta Falcons not made absolute history the following week. So them being 2-0, I think, yeah, it's surprising, mainly because they shouldn't be. Like, they should actually be 1-1. But, hey, the ball bounces the right way sometimes. They've been in the opportunity to get it. And even if luck has played a bigger role for the Bears than maybe it does for other teams early on in the season, they're 2-0. So there you go. You guys are 2-0. Minnesota Vikings. I'm going opposite end of the spectrum. Most surprising record for me,
this is a great one,
is the Vikings, because not only, Ben, are they 0-2, they're a bad 0-2. The Vikings look bad. I mean, like, last week they scored 34 points against the Packers, but it was simply to keep up at the end of the game after Aaron Rodgers had already put that thing away. I mean, going into the final drive for the Vikings in the first half of week one, they had two completed passes, two, going into their final drive of the first half. This week, Kirk Cousins against a defense, let me remind you, an Indianapolis Colts defense, which just 7 days prior, Gardner Minshew carved up 19 for 20, .173 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Kirk Cousins went 11 for 26 for 113 passing yards, 0 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. His 15.9 quarterback rating was the 9th lowest rating of eligible quarterbacks, which I think the stipulation was at least 15 passing attempts. It was the 9th lowest quarterback rating in Vikings history for a single game. The Vikings, on the flip side, listen, you and I picked Minnesota to be the division winners. I very much doubt that's going to happen at this point, especially given not only the fact that they are 0-2, but how they looked going 0-2, because that defense, I thought it'd be a lot better. Look, they look lost in their pass rush without Danielle Hunter. It took them 6 quarters in the NFL to record their first sack. I figured that the secondary was going to struggle. You know, Mike Hughes being in there, Cam Dantzler playing a lot, Jeff Gladney as well, like Holton Hill. I figured that the cornerback group would be something that they would have to deal with. But they've got two great safeties in Harris Smith and Anthony Harris. They have Eric Kendricks. They have Anthony Barr. They traded for Yannick Ngakoue. They still have Julio Johnson. They have Jalen Holmes, who I had hoped for when he was coming out of Ohio State. But they cannot generate anything up front without Danielle Hunter. And that secondary is proving to be more detrimental than I thought they was going to be. On the offensive side of the ball, they can't really get Dalvin Cook going. They cannot get that run game going. And then the most detrimental part to all of it is that Kirk Cousins does not trust anyone who isn't named Adam Thielen.
That's the big thing for me.
He doesn't trust Olabisi Johnson. He doesn't trust Justin Jefferson. He doesn't trust Kyle Rudolph. He doesn't trust Irv Smith Jr. He doesn't trust Tajay Sharp. He doesn't trust anybody. And I don't know if you caught this quote, Ben, during the offseason, the Jay Gruden quote. Did you catch this?
No, I didn't, but then I saw it last week. I lost my mind.
The Jay Gruden
is messy.
The Jay Gruden quote from when Cousins was in Washington when Jay Gruden was the head coach is that sometimes Jay Gruden said that he would give him a play, and if it was not perfect, like if it did not perfectly set up the way that he wanted it to against the defense, Kirk Cousins would just be like, nah, I don't like it. We can't run it. And Jay Gruden would be like, buddy, you're going to have to throw the football at some point. Like, you are going to have to take a chance. And without Stephon Diggs there, look, we can evaluate talent on the roster. I think Justin Jefferson's really good. I like Irv Smith Jr. coming up. I think Olabisi Johnson is kind of an underrated wide receiver. I think all of those guys as a collective could have made up for part of what you're losing in a really, really good wide receiver in Stephon Diggs. Not if Kirk Cousins don't trust him. And he doesn't trust him. He won't throw anybody the ball. And when he does, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's panicking. That is a problem, Ben. They just signed this guy to an extension that keeps Kirk Cousins around for a guaranteed another 2 years. They cannot move on from him. The cap space is too detrimental if they were to try to move
on.
Fully
guaranteed, baby.
And he can't throw to people that aren't Adam Thielen. And the biggest problem is that it's not physical, it's mental. He won't do it.
Yeah.
And that is bad. That's not good. I'm worried about the Vikings, guys. This is my most surprising 0-2 start without a doubt. And I think I'm the most surprised because I don't know how it gets better after seeing how it's 0-2. This is tough. This is tough for Minnesota.
Can I give you another Jay Gruden and Kirk Cousins quote war from their days in Washington?
Please, of course.
This is from Mark Bullock of The Athletic, friend of the pod. Kirk Cousins said in a presser if he threw the ball down the field every time Gruden wanted, he'd throw 30 INTs a year. Next day, Gruden was asked about it and said, yeah, but he'd throw 90 touchdowns.
Jeez.
Just open hostility with your quarterback's play style to the press. You love it.
You really do love to see it. All right, best of the rest segment. That's what we got going. Oh, wait, before we get there, I got to talk about Built Bar.
Yes.
You know, Built Bar, Ben, they have a new formula that they rolled out. Mm-hmm, and I've been told that part of the new formula is actually courage. So if you and I could get together, pull our money together, and buy Kirk Cousins a Built Bar box, maybe the Vikings could get this season turned around.
You'd go from Kirk Cousins to Kirk Courage real quick.
I hate whatever made me come up with that segment now just because of that. Guys, they've got 18 amazing flavors over at Built Bar. They are the best protein bars that are out there on the market. They've got 6 new flavors in addition to the 12 original flavors that they had over the last couple of months that you guys have been buying. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Whew! Good stuff. Built Bar has reset the promo code for its relaunch. So if you use the promo code Locked On, all caps, no spaces, Locked On, you're going to get $10 off your next order. These bars, fantastic for your macros. They've got a ton of protein in them. They're really easy on the calories. Well, some bars are a little bit higher on calories, but some people are looking for that. Like if you're looking for a meal replacement, they've got that too. So you can just go check and look at the nutrition facts. I know that you're going to be able to find an exact bar that you're looking for, whether it's kind of like more of a snack or, like I said, a meal replacement. Built Bar's got a wide variety that you could choose from. They're great for your diet, no matter what your diet is. You can check out all of the flavors, all of the purchasing options over at BuiltBar.com. And when you buy a box, because we know you will, use the promo code Locked On and you will get $10 off your next order. Best of the rest is our final segment this week where Ben and I are going to kind of rapid fire bullet points, try to hit on a couple of more games that we caught either on Red Zone or we were watching out of the corner of our eye or on the timeline, something like that. Benny, where do you want to start this week?
Best of the rest, Josh Allen. Speaking of Minnesota, they got this young man, Stephon Diggs, in Buffalo. He wanted away from Kirk Cousins and was pleased to go to Josh Allen in Buffalo. And you might be saying, hey, Josh Allen in Buffalo can't throw an accurate deep ball. 2 weeks of the season, yes, he can, and especially to Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Brian Daboll's got that offense humming, brother. They're moving guys around, Isaiah McKenzie, Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, through the backfield, option looks, quarterback run looks, ton of pre-stat motion, getting Allen outside of the pocket, simplifying his reads, limiting the areas of the field he can throw to, which is how you limit him making some throws he shouldn't necessarily make. Controlled chaos will be the bridle. Like, you've got to, Allen's going to be all over the place, and it's going to be about riding that wave if you're going to have a successful offense with him. And over the past 3 years, Brian Daboll's just been slowly, surely honing in, man, like a tracing beacon on what you need to do to get an offense out of Josh Allen. And baby, that pass protection with Stephon Diggs now added to the fold as an intermediate deep option, this Bills offense can sing.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah.
And they're going to face the Patriots. And I think they have the linebackers, the safeties, and the corners to handle this attack. And I think they're going to put some points on the Patriots. I think it's going to look good.
No, it's going to be fun. And look, Josh Allen's first two opponents this season, New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins. I mean, these are two of the, how do I put this lightly, not great teams in the NFL. But
prove it.
Record. You got to beat the opponents that you have in front of you. And that's exactly what Josh Allen is doing. And not only is he doing that, he's doing that to the best that we have seen it yet. He's thrown 6 touchdowns, mm-hmm. 0 interceptions, and over 700 yards passing. He threw for 417 yards on this Sunday with 4 touchdowns and no picks. Josh Allen, I mean, for what you said there, we've been trying to figure out, what does an ideal Josh Allen offense look like? Because some people look at Josh Allen and they go like, oh, you could poke fun of him and be like, oh, he'll never be Aaron Rodgers. He'll never be Russell Wilson. Okay, great. Okay, throw those out of the window, because that's dumb to talk about at this point. How do we get the best offense built for Josh Allen, and what does that look like? I think we're seeing that this year. I think he's taking a big step forward this season. I'm excited to see him against better competition. But we were big believers in the Bills. We thought that this was the year for the Bills to win the division, and here they are, 2-0. Josh Allen, phenomenal start. I could not ask for a better start for Josh Allen and the Bills. So I'm glad that you pointed that out. I mentioned Russell Wilson right there. Russell Wilson is currently, as we record this podcast, beating the New England Patriots by a score of 28-3 with like 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So this isn't over yet, but dude, mm-hmm. Wilson.
Man's been throwing some balls.
Wilson's got 4 touchdowns. He's got 1 pick this game, but it was straight off the hands of Greg Olsen, and I'll fight him. I'll fight Greg Olsen next week.
Listen,
on the pod.
I've said this many times. I'm willing to fight Greg Olsen.
I live in Carolina now. He probably travels to Carolina all the time. All right, this just got too real. Greg Olsen's going to beat the crap out of me. Wilson's having a phenomenal year. I wrote about it last week on the Draft Network. This really could be the MVP season for Wilson. It's something that is as... Mm-hmm. eluded him his entire illustrious, successful career, but this could really be it for him. If they pull this out, if they beat New England here and Russell Wilson's a big catalyst, why? I mean, that is 2 giant steps forward, and I really do think that he is in the driver's seat 2 weeks in. 2 weeks in out of 16, it's very early, but Wilson's been having a phenomenal year. This is a great game that we've watched so far. So New England-Seattle, I knew it would be a good test. Cam Newton, 200 yards as well, but Russell Wilson, I think he's stealing the show with what he's doing this year.
He's been right. He's been electric, and they brought up the deep passing on the broadcast.
Best deep passer in the NFL.
Right, but the offense leaning into Russ passing, letting him throw the ball more is one thing. It's the fact that they're just letting him chuck it deep. It's the fact that they're just like, listen, if you're going to be super accurate throwing David Moore open against man coverage, we're just going to let you throw David Moore open against man coverage, because no other quarterback in the league who could see David Moore locked up on the sideline and be like, yeah, I'm just going to put this on the near pylon and score.
Yeah, we're getting after it.
Yeah, he's ugly, man. He's nasty good. And it's exciting to see them letting Russ cook.
Sure, yeah. You got another one? You got another best of the rest?
I do. My last best of the rest is the Arizona Cardinals, who I whiffle-waffled on my Chicago Bears. I felt like I owed it to the Bears, the team that I criticized. We thought that Arizona was going to be fun. They've been more than fun. They win the game against San Francisco in week one, and obviously San Francisco is a bit of a banged-up team, but it doesn't shake the fact that beating, you know, a Kyle Shanahan-coached team is a difficult thing, and there's a lot of talent on San Francisco. Washington came to town. Obviously, you know, like they just beaten the Eagles, and you're talking about like a potential letdown spot or you know, coming off of an emotional win. And what were they really? But Arizona with a 20-0 blank coming into halftime, and they take a 27-3 lead in the third quarter, and this thing was pretty much done then. Washington scored their remaining points to make it 30-15, all in garbage time. The defense isn't great. It's not going to have shutout halves. There's no doubt about that, but they do have athletes that'll run around. Buda Baker, Isaiah Simmons, Hassan Reddick, Byron Murphy. They are willing to run and chase, and that's a big part of their defense. They get some effort plays. They get some good plays behind the line of scrimmage. But then offensively, it's what you're getting out of Kyler Murray in terms of extremely high completion percentage games, using his short area passes to his advantage, not making critical mistakes, then the ability to tuck and run. Two rushing touchdowns today. He's got explosive runs in his first two games. They're able to spread you out. You put seven, you drop eight. You're worried about DeAndre Hopkins. You're worried about all the receivers. And all of a sudden, there's that intermediate gash that Murray's able to get. That's such a big part of that offense. 2-0 start, emphatic. Big win over San Francisco. And then you like to be able to see a team manhandle a worse team. If you're going to be a good team, you need to be able to put away bad teams early. They catch the Lions in week 3. Lions gave them a weird game last year in week 1. They should be able to bully the Lions as well. That'll tell you, again, something you need to know about them. They get the Panthers. They get the Jets. We're looking at a potential 5-0 start for this team if they're able to beat bad teams the way that they should.
Yeah. No, I was super encouraged with how Kyler was doing as I was watching it kind of out of the corner of my eye, and I was watching it on Red Zone as well. Man, I am fully here for the ascension of Kyler Murray and everything that they got going out on in Arizona, because that's a fun team when it's really clicking. And I agree. You know, you got to beat the teams that you can beat, and I think that Arizona's got a good schedule to really make a statement this season. Wanted to touch on Brady and the Buccaneers. The world is not over. They did beat the Carolina Panthers. But I will say, man, this team has so many mental errors. I mean, I think 6 drops on the day, 3 of them were touchdowns. Gronk doesn't look anything like the Gronk of old. I mean, he clearly looks like he has lost a step. I don't know if he's still getting his football legs underneath him or if he really is just a shell of his old self, but that was disappointing. They got the win, but they still look shaky. I think the Bucs are going to have success this year, but I'll reiterate, I think that next year is the year for them. I don't think that it's this year. They're not starting out the way that they need to, especially with no offseason. And then the other game that I was paying attention to in the 4:25 slate of games, Ravens-Texans. I mean, this is a titanic matchup that I felt not a lot of people were talking about. Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson. And look, my final takeaway when I watched this game, there wasn't a lot that happened that like was noteworthy or that I didn't expect. The Ravens looked good. The Texans looked good too, but the Ravens are just clearly a better roster. They're clearly more in their winning window than Houston is. Houston's got the quarterback figured out. They're trying to figure out the rest. They're trying to figure out that offensive line. They've got good things that they have going for them. J.J. Watt was awesome in this game. Really enjoyed watching him, and I thought that Houston's defense was decently up to the challenge, but Baltimore just proved they've got too many weapons on offense, both in the running game and the passing game. Very few teams in the NFL are going to be able to match up against this Ravens team. And that defense was suffocating. I mean, they Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters played incredible. And when you have those two guys out as your outside corners, you can get so aggressive everywhere else in the game plan, and they do, and it works. And that's why Baltimore is one of the best teams in the NFL, and I think that Houston has a good roster. They've just played two really tough opponents in the Chiefs to start the season, Ravens now. And look, Texans might go 0-3. And I almost...
Pittsburgh next week. That defensive line's eating.
I almost talked about the Houston Texans when I talked about my most surprising result because I wanted to purposefully mention that 0-2 for the Texans is not surprising. And it's not because I think they're a terrible roster. It's because I think that Houston is clearly just not there yet. They're still figuring it out the way that they need to. They're just going up against really good teams. And so when Houston's 0-3 and when people freak out because of the fact that they're 0-3... I think that a lot of people are going to look at them through the wrong lens. Now, do they need a lot better on their offensive line? Yeah, they do. Do they need to figure out exactly who the focal point on offense is without Hopkins there anymore? Yeah, it's got to get figured out. But Houston's still fine. I enjoyed watching this game. There just wasn't a lot that happened that I didn't expect. Two really good quarterbacks, one team that's just clearly a lot more further along.
Never forget that people thought that Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans were going to be good this year despite all that's happened to that roster. There was like a, you know, Deshaun's good enough to elevate this team. I think Deshaun's a good passer, absolutely. But he's, at best, the fourth best quarterback in the league. And you can't
That's not
lose,
a slight.
And you can't lose the personnel he's lost. Have the both on offense and then on defense. That defense has gotten worse over the past couple of years. And just expect to continue playing the same way. There's only like Watson was already hero balling the Texans into competition in 2018. And now the team's worse. And you feel terrible for him. He just took that big extension. You hope that Houston gets the coaching staff and the front office around him right, because right now it's wrong, and they're going to continue wasting good Deshaun Watson years for as long as it isn't.
Games that we did not talk about that I'm just going to mention the score and maybe a couple things about. If you want to say something, just completely interrupt me. This is the one time that you get this opportunity, Ben.
I get this opportunity whenever I want. Thank you very much.
Lions-Packers. Aaron Rodgers looks phenomenal this season, and Matt Patricia's seat is getting hot, folks. Packers, man, 42 points. That offense is rolling this year. 49ers-Jets. 49ers made a house call, 80 yards in their first play from scrimmage, and that was about all she wrote. The bigger storyline here with the 49ers is Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, Nick Bosa got hurt, Solomon Thomas got hurt. So, oh man, the 49ers, which are already a team that's been decimated by injuries. You know, Brandon Ayuk was out at the beginning of the season. Debo Samuel is still out. They're dealing with it. You know, they're getting hit by the injury bug hard, and this is a team that a lot of people thought was going to be a double-digit win team again, really compete for a division title, deep playoff run, but when your best players are getting hurt, it's tough to do that no matter what. So, not great from the Jets. 49ers get away with the win, so they're 1-1, but the storyline is really about them moving forward. Rams 37, Eagles 19. Eagles now 0-2, Rams 2-0. Did not see that coming. I really didn't, for both teams. I was much lower on the Rams. I guess a little bit higher on the Eagles than them starting 0-2. Ben,
don't think we have to talk about this game.
Okay, all right. I guess I was asking for your thoughts, but I guess we don't have to talk about this game. Hey, Ben, remember that time Jared Goff started the game 12 for 12 with like 145 yards?
13 for 13.
Oh, sorry, 13 for 13.
Listen, it took the Eagles defense literally two quarters to be like, wait a minute, wait, chill. They run play action on this team? Like, yeah, man. All the time, brother.
Is it just Eagles linebacker glaring need or what?
Name an Eagle linebacker.
Nate Gary, only because you guys complain about him a lot.
Right. Who else do they play at linebacker?
The ghost of Brian Dawkins.
So this is the problem. Like it's Nate Gary, and you only know about him because we talk about how bad he is. And then it's TJ Edwards and Duke Riley. Those are their starting three linebackers.
Oh, they have Duke Riley? Nice. Cool.
It's terrible.
Nice.
Yeah. Carson Wentz is not looking good the first 2 weeks. Extremely concerning, but it's also going to be fine.
Broncos, 0-2 now. They fell to the Steelers, who are now 2-0. Big story from this one, though, is Drew Lock has the AC sprain?
AC, yep, 2 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, 2 to 6 weeks. That's not good, which means it's going to be the Jeff Driscoll show for a couple of weeks in Broncos country. Not great, as somebody who is a Florida fan who watched a lot of Jeff Driscoll in my time as a student at the University of Florida. It's not pretty. Last game that we didn't talk about, the Jaguars-Titans. Jags made it interesting. 30-33. Minshew didn't look half bad again, but the Titans now 2-0. Wait, what was Ryan Tannehill's final stat line? 18 for 24, 239, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
We throw it deep, baby.
Oh, Jonnu Smith, look at my boy going off out here.
Yeah.
Four
Corey
catches,
Davis
84
scored.
Yards.
I'm fine, though. I'm chilling.
Oh, this game was beautiful. Wow.
Sorry, man, did you see that Russ throw to put this thing away?
No, I didn't. Was it incredible?
Yeah, Wilson's got 5 passing touchdowns on the day. It's casual.
What a great way to end the podcast. Tomorrow we're talking college football, guys. We are going back over the weekend, reviewing everything that happened in college football. We're going to talk about the best thing that we saw this week, our standouts in scouting. We're going to talk about some old takes that we had. It's going to be a lot of fun. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.